turned around very calmly, and because he's Nordic, he took a deep breath and he said, "You have an Olympic gold medal in being a nasty, nasty woman sometimes."
Wow. Wow.
And in my mind, I was like, gold medal. Ha! I'm
any gold price. Medal.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, husbands and wives. Welcome to Worst Foot Forward. I am one half of your hosts, Ben Vanderveld, and welcome to the podcast that stands in the doorway at 3 a.m. with curlers in its hair, a rolling pin in one hand, a frying pan in the other, and slowly batters you down the stairs to your hutch in the cellar. With me, as ever, is the apple of my eye, till death do us both part, my co-host Barry McStay.
Till you're ripped from my emaciated body.
Good lord. I can't remember who it is, but another comic has spoken about how getting married is basically going, I bet you all of our stuff that I'm going to live longer than you do.
For me, I was talking to someone about this earlier. It was getting married is just having somebody around to do the stuff I'm not capable of doing. I'm not good at DIY and, like, you know, handling official business.
Yeah.
But I have, having to deal with council tax and things like that. I like a husband who can do all of that.
Yeah, no, your husband and my wife, they are basically our diplomats to the outside world.
Yes, the gatekeeper.
The gatekeeper. You must pass the gatekeeper. I've also learned with my wife as well recently that I can steal literally any item of food from her plate. If I do it, I look her in the eyes and just go, "Till death do us part," and then in it goes.
Yes, I think occasionally my husband will remind me that I am officially his property, which I think slightly misunderstands our marriages. Anyway, we should introduce our guest.
We absolutely should.
Yes, joining us this week is a former banker.
Boo! I'm out of here.
Who chucked it all in to become a comedian.
Yay!
Having grown up in the Philippines, Lucknow and Delhi to a Tamil father and an Uttar Pradeshi mother, studying in India, Britain, Canada and the USA, and married to a Dane while now living in London, at least she knows she can always turn her hand to being an Atlas if the comedy doesn't work out. Which seems unlikely, as she was the BBC New Comedy finalist in 2016. In 2017, she was the runner-up in both the New Act of the Year and the Leicester Mercury New Comedian of the Year Awards. And with plenty of gags, life experience, and a surname as long as my arm, it's Sindhu Venkatanarayanan, or, as we have to keep the podcast under 2 hours, Sindhu V.
That is very good. You got that pat.
I did my best.
You did very well. Actually, that's impressive. That is. I'm already so into this.
You're right. We do our homework here.
Yeah, you
it's
do.
Very helpful. You have a website, which helps.
No, but I mean, people can't pronounce it in one breath. Usually, they get nervous at about TA or NA.
Yeah,
and you didn't. You're like, I'm going through.
That's what I can see it coming. Yeah. I knew the word was coming at the end of the
years
sentence.
Of reciting the catechism as a small boy, knowing that he was going to get a smack if he got it wrong.
Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. This is
although
exciting.
The listeners don't necessarily know that I did that first time.
Don't spoil the illusion.
No, but I wouldn't have been this excited. There would have been a tiredness in my voice. Yes, he did well. I'm genuinely impressed.
Well, thank you. We're very glad to have you.
I'm so pleased to be here.
And we obviously you've got plenty of world experience with a real job and kids and all this sort of stuff.
All of it.
Yet
yeah.
You've made the deviation, literally deviating into comedy.
Yeah, I think what it is I think I was always I don't want to say a deviant, but there you have it. Since we're going with that word, I think it was always like that. But because of, I think especially culture and the time I was born, when, you know, now India is much more free, it wasn't then, I was sort of put into this box and said, go forward. And I many times tried to climb out of the box, but my mother was like, not having any of it. And, you know, she had a gun. So I'm serious. I'd seen it when I was 12, so I was genuinely afraid.
She never threatened you with it. You just saw it and assumed she might use it.
Well, no, because my mother comes from a very feudal background in
Uttar
Pradesh, where people have been known to top family members off if they've, you know, out of anger. One of my uncles, it was very funny, when he was very young, he had a toy rifle.
Right.
And because they were the landlords, no one ever said anything to them. And he took out the eye of one of the other kids from the village.
Wow. Oh,
and
God.
And came home, like, I took out his eye because he said something, and everyone at home was like, yay, you're so brave. So, you know what I mean? I mean, you grew up hearing those things. You're like, I better stay in the box.
God, we were just threatened with the wooden spoon when I was a kid.
No. But I mean, it's not just that. I think you know, there's I did a lot of good things, you know, and I'd never seen live stand-up. I didn't know it was a thing. I think stand-up came to me when it was the right time.
That's good. That's always useful.
I think so.
That's a very balanced approach that very few comics have. And most others are just like, it was either this or become a murderer. So there are definitely several comedians who, if they didn't do comedy, would absolutely be in a high security jail.
Thank God their parents don't own guns.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Thank God for that.
Yeah, but you know, I think if I hadn't become a comic now, there would definitely have been consequences for my kids. I think that I was just nuts at home. I'm sorry. Yeah, I was. I mean, I was not very happy. And I wanted to be with them, but not... Yeah. I guess not do comedy, even though I didn't know that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I think they're very happy. They're like, can you please go to a gig?
Hey, I mean, there's so many comics on the stage who will just go, look, this is not therapy, but it sort of feels like for you, it took the place of it.
No, I still go to therapy.
Oh, cool. Brilliant. Two for one.
That's good. You've managed to separate them.
exactly.
We always like to ask our guests what they are the worst at in the world. And you, like many of our guests, said, oh, everything. But is there anything in particular you
think? I think you misheard. I said it was very easy for me to tell you what I was the worst at because I am so good at most things.
I turn my hand to. I beg your pardon.
I mean, nothing like a little bit of hubris. no, the thing that I am by far the worst at is skiing, which... should not come as a surprise. I mean, the listeners can't see my face, but I'm completely Indian. You know, we don't ski. We go to the tops of snowy mountains to do yoga and renounce the world. Right? We don't go up to come down onto sticks.
Yeah.
And, you know, where the best case scenario is a broken collarbone. No, we don't do that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I've lived in the West now for 20 years. My husband's European, and it's a big thing.
Yeah.
From what I understand, what I can judge is in England, it's quite a middle-class type of thing. But in Europe, in Norway, people with 10-month-old kids, they put them in this belt between their legs. They go to school.
Travel that way, yeah.
They have to.
Well, they do cross-country skiing there, which is even worse. That, you know, just like walking across the land on skis.
Because they have to. And so, obviously, for our family, after I was married, it was just a thing you did. And I've always played sport. So I thought, well, it's a sport. You know, how bad could it be? Oh, my God. But here's the thing. I'm not necessarily bad at the athletic part of skiing. I get there's a word in Danish that's not coming to me now. I get what you call mountain madness.
What's madness?
Well, I go up there, I go crazy.
Oh, wow.
Like the thought of having to come back down is the mad bit?
No, like...
Is that like reefer madness?
I don't know what reefer madness is. No, but I go up there, I get very, very depressed. I start crying. I have anxiety. I used to go and drop the children to the ski lift. I'd be weeping the whole way. And my son, who loves skiing, would be like, Mommy, you really mustn't come. And I'd be like, no. And I'd be the only one of the moms, first of all, the only brown mom, like miles, saying, come back, I'll pay you, come back. And my kids were like, oh my God, we don't know her. It was her. And after the like 7-8 times, we made a decision that I mustn't go because I just lose my mind.
Yeah. Is it surely it's not that you're not good at skiing, you're just not good at altitude?
Well, I've been up to Mukteshwar and all, which is the temples up, you know, up north. I did pass out, so maybe that, I guess, now that I think.
Yeah, but that might have been how enlightenment comes.
No, but, and so I have tried to get on skis, and the moment I get on skis, I'm awful. As my husband once described it, he said, it was like watching a cow giving birth.
There seems to be two types of bad skiers, like the one that just can't stay up on them. And then there's the other one who can, but they have no control over what direction they're going.
Yes. And one leg will go one place. And then, you know, there's the buttons that the children sit on and the little button. I once got on the button. So I'm crying just from the beginning. And the thing is, you ski out in places that are quite Northern European. So their response to acute emotion is to just shut down even more. Right? So the Swiss guy put me on this thing. I was screaming at... And I fell off. And, you know, they come round in a trolley and I just kept getting hit, bam, bam, bam. And every once in a while, there'd be a little white child who would just look at me and then I would just push them so they wouldn't hit me in the face. It was awful. It was one of the most horrible things. So now I don't ski. I don't go skiing. But it annoys me because I don't, you know, like, how could I be that bad at something which so many people do?
Yeah.
But then every time I know someone who goes skiing and then they break something,
yeah, this
I'm
is the
a little
side.
Bit happy.
So we've spoken a lot. We've spoken a lot about mothers, but our subject this week is slightly different. And Cynthia chose it. We're going to talk about the world's worst wife. Why did you pick this subject, Cindy?
Because I think it's very interesting. Well, first of all, I think if you've been married the long enough, if you put in the hard graft, then as a husband, you always think your wife is that person. The world's worst wife. And I think that's a kind of a milestone. Then you know you've been married enough.
I would like to disassociate my comments from, I guess.
No, you haven't been married enough.
No, I really haven't been married enough.
Yeah, exactly. But the other thing is, I think it's just a very interesting thing. I'm very fascinated always by, what makes someone the worst wife.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? You know, what is it? So I thought, well, let me choose that.
We will promise listeners we will do world's worst husband at some point as well, if anyone's getting antsy about it.
Yeah, don't worry. And there's world's worst parents are coming as well.
we'll cover all angles.
God, and then world's worst children as well.
World's worst cousin once removed.
Oh, fuck me. We can do the entire family. Yeah. Right. Oh, God. World's worst stepmother. Oh, God.
No.
That will be therapy.
Yeah, I swear.
So, Barry, you're going to kick us off. What did you find?
Sure. I looked, first of all, at women who'd been wives multiple times. So the most married women. And obviously there are a lot of celebrity ones, but have you heard of Linda Wolf, the most married woman ever?
No.
She has had, I read most of the stuff about her I found came from 2009. So she's
probably got another 35 marriages done by then.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything added to the list yet. Where she was in her late 60s at the time, and she had 23 husbands.
Oh, God.
Yeah, she was first married at 16 years of age, and that was the longest marriage. It lasted 7 years. And over the course of the 23 husbands, only 7 children, which seems like not a lot. Multiple stepchildren, obviously. Her best lover was a guy called Jack Gourley, who she married 3 times. As if the multiple husbands weren't enough, back to the same one several
times.
Do
you think it was that the wedding night sex was the best sex? And all children was like, right, fuck it, we're going to get divorced and then try again. Yeah, just proper control-alt-delete on the marriage.
Yeah, she 2 of her ex-husbands were gay. 2 were homeless. 1 was a one-eyed inmate from the Indiana Reformatory. And 1 marriage lasted only 36 hours. And her last marriage in 1999 was to a guy called Glyn Wolf. That's where she kept his surname. And Glyn was 87 at the time. And he had been married 28 times. He was the most married man in the world. And as a publicity stunt, the most married man and the most married woman married each other. And they didn't stay together. She went back to America, I think, after the wedding.
And was where was he from?
He was from here, I think. I think he got married in Britain.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And did they? Did she divorce all of her husbands, or did some of them pass away?
I didn't see any mentions of... They were so short, most of them. I imagine they were all sort of cut short in various ways. She was asked for advice. She said... Just get married the once and stay married.
No shit.
She said if she could live her life over again, she would never ever marry so much. And can you imagine she got to like 10 and said, God, maybe I should stop this.
No, I'll do 13.
Yeah, I'll do another few. And then looked at some celebrity wives. Zsa Zsa Gabor, obviously famously, had 9 marriages, including to Conrad Hilton of the Hilton Hotel Dynasty.
So at this point, we're looking at wives who've married a lot.
Well, I would say just around the subject
I came across.
Yeah.
No, but that could count. If you've married a lot, you could argue that either you're a terrible wife because you don't stay married and loyal, or you're an amazing wife because you do it loads of times. You know, you're like a world champion of wifing if you've been married
8 times wife. I'm so good at it. Zsa Zsa Gabor was married to Conrad Hilton, and she had an affair with his son Nicky, or his stepson Nicky, who was Liz Taylor's one of Liz Taylor's eight husbands, or seven husbands. She had eight marriages, married Richard Burton twice.
God, I mean, that's grief. That's Woody Allen style behaviour, isn't it?
Yeah, it's right up there.
Yeah.
And Liz Taylor, obviously, eight marriages, including marrying Richard Burton twice. And Lana Turner also was married eight times, again, to seven different men, one guy twice.
I think it's very glamorous, but that's because these ladies were glamorous. So what they did seems glamorous. Yeah. I'm sure if someone without that career trajectory was doing it, you know, down the street, you wouldn't think it was so glamorous.
If they live in a trailer park, then it's not glamorous, is it?
That's it. If they've been to the Oscars, it's classy.
Yeah, exactly. No, but there's a sense of being louche and, you know, like an artist and so cool and marrying again. It's quite impressive.
The actress and the billionaire, whatever it is. Then, being Irish, I was looking into things that women and wives couldn't do in certain cultures.
Okay.
And I found a list of things Irish women could not do in the year 1970.
Oh, good God.
Yeah.
Tell us.
This affected my granny, in fact. If you worked in public service or in a bank, when you were married, you had to quit your job. So if you were working in the civil service or if you were a teacher or anything like that, you had to quit because it was felt that that was a job that should go to a man and that men would be the breadwinners supporting a family. And that women, single women, shouldn't be there, or women shouldn't be there occupying the job that a man should be doing. So my granny was a primary school teacher, and she had to, back in the 40s when she got married.
1970?
Yeah, mm-hmm. But she was working in the 40s, she got married, and she had to quit her job as a primary school teacher, because,
But in 1970, Indira Gandhi was our Prime Minister. Holy cow!
Yeah, 1973 was when that changed.
And that counts a lot more when an Indian says, holy cow.
Oh, yes.
That's how we like to say, holy cow.
Yeah. Women couldn't sit in juries, couldn't buy contraceptives. Yes.
Obviously.
Eventually, the Irish came up with a very Irish solution. It's described as an Irish solution to an Irish problem, where doctors would prescribe contraceptive to married couples only. And so come in and you say, oh, we need contraception.
Lord.
Couldn't collect her children's allowance. Couldn't get a barring order against a violent partner.
What? So you had to just keep getting beat up?
Yeah, they'd have to go home because it was the man's house. In fact, men were considered to own the family house, even if it was... The woman was the breadwinner.
But was it the same in England?
No, well, England, this sort of stuff was legally got rid of in the sort of 19th century. So it's 1857, I believe, that a wife stops becoming the property of a man.
Yeah.
And then,
coverture, is that what it was called?
That's the one. Yeah. And the one that really winds me up with legislation in the... So the culture in the... England in the 1880s and 1890s, so a lot of married men would go out and use prostitutes, and it was perfectly acceptable if a married man felt that the wife was not satisfying him, perfectly reasonable to go out and use a prostitute. If that married man then got an STD, it was obviously the fault of the prostitute.
Yeah.
And it was considered perfectly acceptable for a married man to have a prostitute, but if you were a prostitute, you were disgusting, harridan and a whore.
Yeah, how dare you.
Yeah.
Along that line, it was still illegal. A lot of these laws were changed in the 70s and 80s in Ireland. It was illegal to refuse, you couldn't refuse sex to your husband.
Yes, I think there's something about that in India, but in India you have laws that say that are as sort of progressive, and then you have the custom.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, it's interesting around sex because no one ever talks about anything. I mean, we have no idea how anyone's born. But every once in a while, there'll be something in the paper that a family agreed to bring their daughter home.
Oh, right.
Because the husband was, well, they don't say it was not satisfying her, but there was going to be no kids. So there's like that kind of thing you hear about.
Well, apparently in Jewish law and halachic law...
guys can get a divorce.
Yeah. If
you can't have kids.
If the woman is not sexually satisfied.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Which...
That's, how does a judge rule on that?
Well, I think it takes a lot of guts for women to get up and say it.
Yeah, yeah.
And once they've said it, then they just go with it, don't they? There's quite a lot of, I guess this law really made sense for Jewish people back when they all lived in a shul, and there was a shul, and everyone knew everyone. Didn't live in a shul, but you know what I mean.
They all knew everyone,
and so they would know that. Oh yes, you know, whatever Saul.
Saul the tailor is clearly not doing his. It's a tricky one. And scandalously, in this country, I think it was 1994 that marital rape became illegal.
Yeah, it was quite late. The marital rape didn't exist in Irish law until 1990, and the first successful prosecution for it wasn't until 2002. And you could sue another man for sleeping with your wife.
And then go home and better your wife. Yeah. Excellent.
It was called Criminal Concert Conversation.
I mean, obviously don't go home and batter your wife. And obviously the wife is as guilty as the man in that situation. But
it sort of treats the woman as his property.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I sue both of them? Is that okay?
I don't think so.
But then if everything of your wife's is yours, then you'll only be suing yourself.
That's true. Yeah, it all belongs to you. That's how they get you.
Yeah, that's me defeated in court in like 10 seconds.
My wife slept with someone else and now I am poor. That doesn't work.
And she doesn't think you were that good anyway.
Exactly. No,
that is the saddest story in the shtetl.
I read about some very horrific wives in Hungary. The Angel Makers of Nagyarev. Have you heard of these ladies?
No.
So, between the years of 1914 and 1929, 15-year period in a village of Nagyarev in Hungary, there were 45 to 50 people poisoned. Some estimate as many as 300, but the big expert on it says 45 to 50.
Indian wedding gone
wrong. Yes. Well, this was a series of women who were... The big thing behind it was that their... Firstly, Hungarian customs allow teenage brides to just be given to their husbands by the family. Yeah. Divorce was disapproved of, so if you were with someone you didn't like, you were trapped with them. And World War One obviously happened, and a lot of men went off to war. And the Nagyarev region had a lot of POWs in it, and sort of army stations. And so you'd have a lot of affairs between women whose husbands were away at war, and unhappy wives and everything. And there was this wise woman called Susanna Fazekas, who was a wise woman midwife, and she basically taught the women of this area how to boil flypaper to skim off the arsenic from the flypaper, and said this is how you get out of these horrendous situations. This is how you get rid of your husband if you don't want him now he's coming back from war, or if he's beating you, or if you're in an unhappy marriage. And by the way, you could always kill your parents for their inheritance, and if you got an annoying child you could do this. And so she basically just taught all these women. I mean, there's a little bit of you goes, oh, it's kind of like suffrage, women's
not
rights.
A little bit of me, quite a big lot of me. Because I feel like when a woman is, when woman or man, doesn't matter, but we're talking about women right now. When you are trapped and you know that there's culturally, family-wise, you are not going to be able to have a say, and it's something very important to you, I think it does things to your system and your soul that is... I think we see it in animals in zoos, but we're not used to human beings doing that. And I do know of certain young women that I grew up with who are from very good families, whose husbands were chosen. And, you know, it broke them. They didn't like the guy. In a way, I feel like at that point, if you need to get out by putting some flypaper paste in someone's soup, do it. Because I think every...
Make it some good soup.
Yeah. I mean, I think every living being deserves the right.
Yeah.
And I'm taking... a human being, imagine, especially if these women were probably also taking care of the family, doing this, doing that.
Yeah.
I have to say, I kind of like the old lady.
Yeah. Oh, she seems like a real liberator.
Yeah.
But yeah, you wouldn't fancy being married to any of those women. You just wouldn't.
You wouldn't fancy making them unhappy.
I'll make my own soup. It's fine.
I'll cook for you, dear.
I'm happy with the flies. We don't need flypaper.
But that's a pretty large scale.
Yeah. They prosecuted 26 people, 8 people sentenced to death, only 2 were executed, and 12 prison terms. I'm not sure. I think she got imprisoned as well. But she was also, she would carry out abortions and things, and was arrested several times for doing that, but she always managed to convince the judges that actually it was in the women's and in the interest of the women.
Yeah.
So she seems like quite a forward thinker.
Thing is, it's so mixed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's when things become so grey. What's what?
Yeah. But
it's
interesting.
I never found any of this.
Yeah, it's cool. I should get on to my choice. I think the candidate for the world's worst wife, the position of world's worst wife would be any of the wives of the Roman Emperor Claudius.
It's only a matter of time.
You read a bit about him?
Oh my God.
Great.
Sweet.
Oh, lovely. So, Claudius was married 4 times. He was married firstly to a woman called Plautia, who he divorced for adultery and on suspicion of her murdering her sister-in-law. Just think you might have done it, so I'm just going to stay away from you. A woman called Aelia, who was a relative of Sejanus, who was a big Praetorian guard, and he divorced her, possibly for emotional abuse against him.
Oh.
And Claudius, if anyone's seen I, Claudius, or knows their history, will know was sort of possibly had cerebral palsy. He certainly slurred his words and dribbled a lot, and was considered quite vile by his mother and shunned by a lot of people.
Yeah, he was not a debonair chap at all.
Yes, no, and he wasn't really considered a likely person to become emperor, but a series of things led to him becoming emperor.
Well, as in like a series of unfortunate events?
Well, Caligula was murdered by the German guard, who were one of the emperor's bodyguards, and the Praetorians basically picked Claudius to be his successor, and as a member of the royal family, I think they thought he would be a puppet because he was such an unlikely figure. And the story is that he was found hiding behind a curtain in the palace when the Praetorians declared him emperor, and he's like, "I don't want to be emperor. You're emperor, sorry." At that point, when he was made emperor, he was married to a woman called Messalina, who was a cousin to Nero and Caligula. She seems to have been mental.
Insane.
Yes.
Dude, she was out. Go ahead. But she was nuts.
She married Claudius when she was 18 and he was in his late 40s. And he was her first cousin once removed, by the way, because they did a lot of inbreeding.
World's worst first cousin once removed.
Yes, so there we go. Done. And when he was declared emperor, obviously she became empress, and he seemed to just do whatever she wanted him to do. So if she didn't like someone, execute them or exile them or kick them out. And he got this reputation for being under her thumb. And so much so that when he went away on holidays at one point, she just married a senator that she liked called Silius, which is a silly
That's
name.
Straight out of Monty Python, isn't it?
Senator Silius, and there was stories from Tacitus and Pliny that she would compete with a prostitute to have the most lovers in a day, and she won with 25, which seems like a convenient number. 24 hours in a day, she had 25 lovers.
Bravo.
But when Claudius found out about her marrying Silius, he eventually caved and said, should probably execute these two. They're probably plotting a coup. And he replaced her with Agrippina the Younger, who you might also know as Nero's mother.
What?
Yeah. She was Nero's mother. Also Claudius's niece. Even closer related, which first cousin once removed, fine. Nieces apparently seriously frowned upon.
Right.
But he wanted to unite both halves of the imperial family. So he's the Claudian half and she was from the Julian half of the family. So he thought it would make the throne more secure if he was married to her. And again, she was conniving. Again, this is what history tells us. May or may not be true. But she wanted Nero to be the heir, and he sort of went along with that initially, but then towards the end of his life, they start to grow apart, and he's now, actually, I want my other son, Britannicus, to become emperor.
From
Messalina, their son.
Okay.
Britannicus, he said, I prefer him. He was not quite of age, and he was like, I need to stay alive long enough for Britannicus to become of age and so he can be emperor. No, he didn't make it, funny enough. Funny enough, didn't make it. Claudius died, possibly poisoned by a plate of mushrooms. Provided by Agrippina, Nero became king, or emperor rather, and she apparently still pissed him off, even as his mother, and he tried to kill her by various ways, including poison and dropping a weight through a ship that she was on and sinking the ship, and she swam ashore and survived.
Like in a Tom and Jerry cartoon. That is
he eventually had to just settle for stabbing her.
He just had a storeroom full of grand pianos.
Yeah. Apparently when she was stabbed, she told the assassin, stab me in the womb, because that's where Nero had come from.
That's dark.
Yeah.
Good grief. And also one of the things that all these people that Messalina apparently would tell Claudius to get rid of was all people that she had that had not responded positively to her many sexual advances.
Yeah. She was apparently quite an info.
Apparently. But here's the thing is, I just think like, there's so much power in these women.
Yeah.
Do you know, there's so much power, and you think, I think it makes you a terrible wife.
Yeah.
But there's something about them, I'm like, wow.
Yeah. And jeez. Because there is that weird thing of them being inferior, if you like, to the emperors. There's no chance of them becoming the ruler of Rome.
Yeah.
But so much power resides in them as the provider of heirs. And
the
currency between families and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, take your pick from any of the four wives that Nero had. But I think, Messalina is probably going to be, or rather the wives that Claudius had. But I think Messalina, first wife of Claudius, or third wife of Claudius, is my choice.
I also looked at that because I thought in mythology there's, very interesting stories about bad wives.
Yeah, there is. Well, now it's time to reveal what else you have. Who is your worst wife, Cindy?
Well, as a wife, as a wife, there's a number of things that I think would qualify someone as a bad wife that I simply will not have any truck with.
Okay,
because
brilliant.
You just, I mean, dude, staying married is hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you very shitty sometimes, and that doesn't make you a bad wife. It just makes you trying to stay alive. So I've just got rid of all that. You know, things like, oh, she doesn't cook. She doesn't, no, I don't. Or no, she doesn't. Whatever. So we're out with that. So I thought, let's go for the real thing. So I came up, so I did, I mean, with the internet, really, you can get, I got lost. I went like click, 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 and then I was, you know, somewhere. But one thing that I came up with was this, the first Australian woman to be sentenced to a natural life term without parole, Catherine Knight. So she had a history of violence in relationships. Fair enough. Now, here is what she did. One of her ex-husbands, she mashed his dentures up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another one, she slashed the throat of his eight-week-old puppy before his eyes.
Oh my God.
But the thing for which she was finally got this natural life term, and I'm telling you this because I have to say, I don't care what that guy did. This is bad, what's coming up. And I'm just going to read it out, okay? Here's what she did. So it was Thomas Price was the husband. She stabbed Mr. Price 37 times with a butcher's knife before skinning him and hanging his hide from a meat hook in their lounge back room in 2000. She then decapitated him and put his head in a pot on the stove, baked flesh from his buttocks, and cooked vegetables and gravy as side dishes to serve to his children.
I like that she serves him with side dishes.
His children.
What do you pair with a boiled man head?
Oh, with a little Chianti. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then the police found the macabre dinner before the adult children arrived home.
Thank God.
Now, this is obviously, by any objective standard, the worst wife. Like, it's one thing to be angry at your spouse. It's another thing to maybe hit him over the head with a teacup.
you know, say that like you've done that.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but, you know, or it's one thing to burn his clothes, or it's one thing to even maybe punch him. You're so angry. It's been known to happen. It's another thing to leave the house. There's a number of things you have to get through, which will sort of, I think, make things better.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to know what would make you get to the point where you're hanging up this guy in your back room from a hook and skinning him and then feeding him to his kids. I think
she sounds like quite a good cook, though. Like, she's bothered to hang the meat
before cooking. Dude, she sounds like quite a good psychopath.
Actually, the thing is, I saw her as well, and I saw a picture of her, and obviously, never judge a book by its cover. She looks like she could work in the post office.
She's got that Farrah Fawcett hairstyle of that time.
Yeah.
So, but she's not my worst. She's not my worst.
Oh, wow.
Well, I was going to say, though, you said a good cook. Also, I mean, I can barely skin a chicken breast, so skinning an entire man, that is...
takes time and effort.
It does.
I'm vegetarian, so let's say there have been times I haven't been able to peel a courgette very well.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, well, do you reckon she managed to do it all in one go? Like, I always try with a clementine.
Like peeling an orange. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Anyway, but here's the thing. I really had to think about what makes someone the worst wife, and I think this then speaks to what I think about, like, how I look at marriage, because... remember Jason with the fleece back again?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Jason with the fleece.
Yes, yeah.
He was married to Medea.
Yeah.
And Medea was actually a very good wife because he showed up and he needed the fleece and she gave him all the tricks.
Yep.
I can't exactly remember what it was, the teeth and this and they used it because she wanted to marry him. And then they got the fleece, they got on the ship and they were leaving and she was so devoted to her husband, so not a bad wife, that on the way when her father was chasing them, she slaughtered her brother and cut him into pieces and threw him into the ocean. So the father had to stop
to pick up
his pieces so he could give him a proper burial. Such a good wife. Oh my God, do anything for
terrible sister, good wife.
Also terrible daughter. Exactly. Yeah. But it's all about the husband. And then she went along, did all this stuff. And she also then, they needed some help from one of the kings and she managed to bring someone back from the dead. And then later when they got where they were going, it was King Peleus, wasn't it? And Peleus and his daughters said, you know, please, can you do this for our father? And she somehow, again, to help her husband, tricked these girls into cutting their father up into pieces and making him into a soup.
Yeah.
But again, it was for the good of her husband. Fair enough. Now, as often happens in marriage, there came a time where Jason was like, dude, this, you have been amazing, but I like this other lady. And her name was Glauce. You know, I can't say it, but it's Glauce. When he said that, first of all, if I was married to someone who had done all those things, I'd have been like, dude, wow. Because, you know, people are not doing that in a vacuum. They'll do it to you.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what she did? And this is why I think she's the worst wife, is she was so angry, she killed her children that she'd had with Jason. She murdered those children.
Oh, Medea.
Okay.
She makes good stage plays. That's Medea.
Yeah, but I mean, to kill the children, first of all, as a mother, you know, it's just insane.
Of course.
But also, there's so many ways you could spite your spouse.
Mm.
And men often do this, not often, but I've read it in the news a lot, where they will say, you know, all this kind of news you read, especially in those fantastic newspapers like Daily Mail.
Yeah.
where there's, you know, where the kids went home to see, went to spend the weekend with their divorced dad, and he drove off with them and then gassed himself and them and said, I'm sorry, because he thinks the wife shouldn't be banging some other guy. Whatever. You know, that's one thing.
That's basically the Daily Mail. Between photos of women in bikinis and Brexit. Yes.
But this, she killed her own kids to spite him. And that is a worst wife.
Mm.
It's also the worst mother.
Yeah, yeah, but, you know, double header.
But I mean, here's the thing. She'd been the worst many things, as you mentioned, yeah, yeah, right, along the way. But why the kids? Not their fault. And just to spite her husband. That was bad. So in my opinion, I thought she was a very... I once got a fantastic compliment from my husband because I was being so awful, which I'd like to share. We were having an argument, and I said something nasty, I can't remember. And he very calmly turned around. I had thrown a mug of tea.
There it is.
You'd up from the teacup to a mug.
And he moved, and it went on the wall because, you know, we don't fight much, but when we fight, it's
spectacular.
Yeah, it's HBO box office.
And it's usually because of me. Anyway, losing my shit. Anywho, and so he turned around very calmly, and because he's Nordic, he took a deep breath and he said, you have an Olympic gold medal in being a nasty, nasty woman sometimes.
Wow.
And in my mind, I was like, gold medal. Ha!
Any gold phrase. That's what you do with reviews. You pick out the good phrase.
Dude, I was like, if he'd said bronze medal, I'd have murdered him.
I also... went down quite a bloodthirsty route. A couple of other people who deserve some dishonourable mentions. There is Stacey Castor. She killed her husband using a turkey baster and some antifreeze.
Yeah.
And she basically... she did that. And then she framed her daughter for the murder...
What did she do with the turkey baster? Put it in his mouth?
Well, he was asleep, I think.
Yeah,
and then
I thought she...
Or who knows? I haven't looked at the coroner's report.
In some orifice or another.
Yes, she has upwards, you know, 8 to choose from. Maybe she was very thorough. Maybe it was a turkey baster in each.
No, but they said the turkey baster is such a specific thing.
It is.
It seems like
it makes. I mean, it's in a way it's quite a farcical murder weapon.
Yeah,
you wouldn't find it in Cluedo.
He came out beautifully crispy though.
Yeah.
And then she framed her daughter?
Yeah, framed her daughter for doing it by giving her painkillers and faking a letter. But the daughter survived, and that's how she got banged away. Mm-hmm. I think we could do a Stacey Castor Catherine Knight cookbook. I think it would be...
disgusting.
With Medea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, with the soup of the father.
Oh, good
Lord. Medea's minute meals.
Another wife, who I'm really surprised hasn't been mentioned, but a very honourable mention, has to go for Lorena Bobbitt.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, of course.
Of course. Very famous for all of us when we were growing up. For younger listeners, Lorena Bobbitt was the most famous woman ever to cut off her husband's penis. It has happened multiple times in various cultures. Wonderfully, she cut it off threw it into a field.
Yes.
And then he called 911 and there was a search party for it, presumably not with dogs.
Yeah.
Going, what's that boy? Oh, and that's a penis down the throat. It was reattached as well. Sorry, Anna.
Was it reattached?
Yeah,
it was,
he did
it
was reattached. Porn. He did porn afterwards.
We're coming to that,
oh,
my friend.
No.
So, now.
Sorry, just imagining the people who showed up at the search party when they're told we're out hunting for dick in a field.
Oh, my God.
So he was, and he's not a good guy. He allegedly did it in response to either physical, emotional abuse or possibly even a rape attempt. And she sort of...
That always gets glossed over a bit, doesn't it? They sort of go, she was this mad woman who cut his dick off. And you go, well,
yeah.
What does he do to deserve it?
Well, it's because he did not go to jail for that. And then she was...
giving her own cook show.
Yeah. And this week again, sausage. She was exonerated because she pleaded insanity.
Oh, yes.
And so she managed to get off it. And then he, before he turned up in a porn movie, John formed a band called The Severed Parts.
Oh, my God.
Later inspired, I assume, Adam Kay's the amateur transplants. I don't know. he was in John Wayne Bobbitt Uncut, and brilliantly, a film called Frankenbeenus.
Yeah. I mean, talk about cashing in. I bet he ranged it.
Oh, yeah, almost certainly. And then, as a callback to a previous podcast, he even appeared on WWF Raw alongside Val Venus.
Yes.
Almost entirely, I imagine, for rhyming reasons.
Yeah.
And most recently, he's not a good guy. He's a proper, like, bad hillbilly. He was put in prison for battery for a few weeks. And in 2014, he broke his neck in a car crash. What a shame.
Did he die?
No, I think he's still with us. His spirit lives on.
Oh, no.
Most of him is still with us.
Yeah. I really hope when he's buried, there's like a human coffin and a tiny little penis coffin next to it.
What about that lady?
So, I will tell you, a potted history of her life. She, later on in her life, was put on trial for punching her mother.
Oh, good.
She also appeared on Oprah. And appeared on an episode of The Insider with John Wayne Bobbitt.
Of what? The Insider?
The Insider. What's like, it's another talk show.
Right.
Now, here's the thing.
With her husband.
I love and adore my wife. If I were to ever upset her so much that she justifiably cut off my penis, I obviously would never appear in the same room as her, never mind on a television show, unless the fee was excellent.
Maybe the fee was excellent.
Maybe it was. And what's wonderful about, I say wonderful with heavy inverted commas around it, is that, you know, it is now bobbiting, or to bobbitize, has made it into the dictionary as the verb for cutting off someone's penis.
Yeah.
There is even, I believe, a type of parasite that either clamps onto the penis or chops off the penis that has been named after Lorena Bobbitt.
Yeah.
Good God. Why do you think this Bobbitt case became so famous? Is it because it was the first time?
The first time happened in America, maybe? Because it's happened in China and Russia. I think some Germans did it.
And it was the early 90s, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah.
So that sort of sensational story.
Yeah, but also might be because they didn't just disappear. They kept on cashing in and saying, Frankenstein penis, this, that. You know what I mean?
Look,
in talk shows and...
They're from the number one capitalist society on Earth, so they just knew how to cash in.
Yeah.
They're smart, smart guys. But when I read about the Bobbitt parasite, I then started thinking, hang on, I need to widen my search. And I widened my search to the animal kingdom. And there are...
The actual black widows, as opposed to black widow killers.
Yes. Do you know what? Didn't even go close to them.
Oh, really?
I had a brief look at the most monogamous animals. The most monogamous animal on Earth is the prairie vole. The male prairie vole is such a nerd because he stays with the vole that he loses his virginity to.
Oh, gosh,
to the extent that any other female comes near him, he attacks her.
Oh, he's like, wow. No, I'm only hers.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Like this little guy.
They sound cool.
Yeah, they're really sweet. But I was obviously more interested at the other end.
Yeah.
So, there are certain breeds of sparrow where the female will just go off and shag anyone. But the thing is, the man sparrow is onto it and he can identify which chick it is, and he will feed that chick less food.
Oh, wow.
The ones that are not his.
The ones that are not his. Amazing.
Yeah, so...
Oh, good God.
Yeah, so good on him. You know, he's managed to...
Yeah, and she's like, I'm having a lot of sex. I just, you know, good luck to you kids.
Yeah.
It's your dad's fault.
There is also the topi antelope. Now, she's got a pretty tricky time of it in that she is fertile for only one day out of 365.
Whoa.
And on that day, she will chase male suitors down and force them to mate with her.
Oh my God, can you imagine that in clubs?
Yeah.
In
real life. I mean, there have been times people have been that drunk. I'm like, that's what's going on here.
Yeah, that's what's going on here.
It's like The Purge. that film for one day a year crime is legal
exactly.
for one day a year.
But again, the topi antelope, she's very much barely in the, you know, the top three or four for this. A brief shout out to the octopus. There are many octopuses that will mate, then asphyxiate the male, drag them back to their den and eat them.
Whoa.
Yeah,
that's two in one.
Two in
sex
one.
Sex and dinner.
Sex and dinner, which obviously we know spiders do, but octopuses are bigger, scarier and smarter.
Yeah.
And have beaks.
So she could be doing like a hand job with a few of the tentacles and then strangling you with the other ones. Going, oh, it's just a bit of autoerotic asphyxiation. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Oh my God. Maybe Michael Hutchence dated an octopus. Twist! Meanwhile, there's also a big shout out, literally, goes to the Barbary macaques, which are a type of ape, because female Barbary macaques will often fake orgasms to attract other males to come and mate with them.
Like, it's like having sex with someone, and as you're having sex with them, they're shouting, this person's not any good, because someone else
Yeah, like a terrible street trader.
Yeah.
And the theory behind that is they do that so that the male macaques don't know which one of them gave birth to the baby to prevent patricide. But there's two that I'm really tempted by. The first is something called an antechnicus. And an antechnicus is like a very, very small marsupial.
Okay.
And you wouldn't know it to look at it. You'd think it was a rodent. And these marsupials, they go at it for 12 hours.
Oh, I've heard of these. Yeah.
They hump. I mean, I say they hump like rabbits. Rabbits sort of look at them and go, we're done after 3 hours, mate. but the women humps the man so hard, it can lose to loss of fur, internal bleeding, a broken immune system, and in some cases, death.
But what a way to go!
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, those are astonishing side effects to any medicine.
I know, exactly. It's like, this is, what a way to go.
Yeah.
They lead to loss of life, but also new life.
Yeah. Apparently, it's what a miracle life is.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's either them.
Do they have a one in, one out policy in the Antechnicus kingdom? If we're going to have sex, you need to die so this child can live.
And take their shoes off.
Yeah.
But there's also the anglerfish, which is like the deep sea fish.
Yeah,
you know, with a like flat, massive mouth, astonishingly ugly. Now, what happens with them is that when the male anglerfish mates, it attaches itself to the female's body with its mouth. It fuses to the female's skin.
Jesus.
It also fuses its own like system of arteries to hers, so they mix blood together in a very 16th century metaphysical poets kind of way.
Yeah, John Donne be all over this.
Absolutely.
Shit.
And then essentially it withers and dies and becomes an extra source of sperm for the female anglerfish. And there have been many recorded sightings of female anglerfish with multiple withered male sperm corpses
Whoa.
On her body swimming along through the deep sea.
God, talk about being needy. Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
But also very, very giving.
Yeah, yeah. Remember about 5 years ago, kids were all wearing like those wristbands of different colours to show you what they'd done.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Just wearing dead guys.
Just wearing dead bodies. But I mean, it's like, you look, you know, yeah, you want to give me the sperm, that's fine, but you have to fuse yourself onto me, then please die, because I can't swim around with this shit, you know, I mean, I've got to, like, make kids and stuff. And
exactly, can you imagine going on stage and you've just got all your ex-boyfriends attached to your back?
Like,
now this one, he was a real pain. I brought props.
Well, how needy, I mean, come on.
I know, so I think I'm torn.
But being married to her would be, deadly.
It's well, exactly, and I think because with the Antechnicus, they look cute, and as you said, what a way to go.
Yeah,
I like that, though.
You're strolling into Antechnicus heaven going, guys, like, 12-hour session. Who's the legend? And all the other Antechnicuses are going, well, we're all legends, that's why we're all here. But I think because they're cute and the anglerfish is incredibly ugly, And also, you know, just stacks up man after man after man.
And the fusing of the blood and stuff. Yeah, it's like, oh,
seems incredible as well.
What happened to cookies?
Yeah. Well, no, they're the ultimate.
Not
cookie. No, yeah, I was going to say the ultimate hickey as well, hickey, aren't they?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what
I've got to go to work. Oh, let's have breakfast. No, I'm really, I think probably should. Oh, it's all right. I don't mind. I'll cook it for you. Like, just get out of my house. No, I'm here now. No, I may as well. Jesus Christ, anglerfish.
I know, exactly. Can you imagine someone give you a hickey and then just died and got hung from your neck? It'd be like really hard to explain.
Yeah.
Because when the age when you're getting hickeys and stuff, it's not something. Can't come home and be like, Mom, just don't. No, just forget it.
Anglerfish kids sneaking home again and going, trying to cover the little lamp that they have at the front so they can't see the guy hanging off the side of them.
So our choices are the real human Messalina, who was the wife of Claudius, or the mythical human Medea, who killed her child, or the actual deep sea fish, the anglerfish. I'll level with you. This is going to be tough, guys.
I mean, I think Zsa Zsa Gabor was married to most of them at some point.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Zsa Zsa Gabor was a human anglerfish.
Yeah.
Especially after all of that surgery. Yes. She got the plastic surgery.
Maybe she was covering up all the...
That's it. Yeah. Dead Conrad Hilton.
Yeah.
Oh, it's tough. I mean, obviously, you could straight away disqualify my anglerfish because, you know, there is no concept of legal marriage. Far, far deep under the sea.
Plus, also, it's not the wife's fault. It's the guy who mixes the blood and drops dead. She doesn't do anything. She's swimming along. It doesn't say that she said, you know, she does anything. It's about worst wife, not most ridiculous copulation technique. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I think if it's that is solid mid-table. It's going to be weirder ones.
No, but I'm saying she doesn't do it, right? She doesn't grab him or... The other one, the little vole, is like going to bang you so hard for so long because you said she does it.
Yeah.
You might even die. And if you don't die, your other option is like your thyroid system breaks or you have no hair.
Exactly.
What?
which is tough. But to be fair, although being fucked to death doesn't sound great, it does sound a little bit great. So
fair enough.
So like I can't go for that. And you're right, it can't be the anglerfish. As much as I'd love it to be.
Very noble of you.
Thank you very much. It's really tempting. So, Medea or Messalina? Remind me what Messalina did again. What was the worst thing she did?
She was nymphomania. I think shagging having a shagathon against a famous prostitute. There's another story that she just would have sex in the forum, like out in public, in front of people.
So
and
she
she's the Empress of Rome.
Yeah, but here's my thing. Claudius knew.
Yeah, he was a bit of a pushover. This is true. It took her marrying another man and probably plotting a coup for him to kill her.
And by the way, the guy she married, he was like, Claudius was like, his main advisors went behind his back and were like, you need to get rid of her. And finally, when they did, he was like, I'll just have more wine, thanks.
They said, we're going to go kill her now. And he's like, pass the wine.
Just pass the wine. I mean, come on.
I wanted to say
to Claudius, dude, what was going on? Because it's not like he hadn't had other wives he'd got rid of.
Yes, it's true.
So what was it about this lady? And she was literally banging everybody and killing people, and he was often advised that he was killing people for the wrong reason, and he was like, nope, this is my wife.
She was very much a human antechnicus, wasn't she?
Trying to fuck people to death.
You're right, she was awful but as a wife, but he was both a terrible husband and a terrible leader, which leaves us, of course, with a very well-argued case for Medea. And you're right, You're right. Your duty as a wife is to, you know, provide, be a partner to your husband, but also ideally to provide children, look after them, and build a family. She didn't do that.
She didn't when he said, "I'm going to marry someone else." And one thing I forgot to mention is she sent that dress. So when he said, "I'm going to marry this Glauce or whatever," let's just call her Glauce.
Yes.
She sent her a dress that she put on, and either she combusted she or was poison or. Mm. So she did that. That also, I thought, okay, you know what? I've been jealous. You know, actually, I don't have those dresses, but who knows if I had. You know what I mean? I've been jealous in my time.
Yeah.
But then the guy...
A breakup's a breakup, guys. Come on.
like all is fair in love and war between you and the person. But then he leaves, and what she does is she kills her young kids. And I think as a wife, that's an ultimate betrayal. Because here's the thing. Marriage is many things. But one of the things I think that's that two people are equally responsible for is offspring.
Yeah.
And it's unfair to the other person who leaves you to say, well, I'm going to take it out on the kids.
Mm, yeah.
I think that's very unfair as a wife.
I'd like to get them on Jeremy Kyle.
Yeah.
I watched that show for the first couple of weeks ago, and my kids came in and said, oh my God, why are you watching it? I was transfixed. I was like, who are these people? Oh my God. And the mother and the daughter. It's always when, and it was a German lady, and she was arguing with her husband, and their daughter was in another room.
Watching them on TV.
No, she was in the room because she had another kid. She was hysterical. And this Jeremy Kyle was being very rude to the lady. Like, he didn't like the lady. You could tell. I was like, because there's so much comedy about Jeremy Kyle. And I was like, I need to watch this. I couldn't move. I was like, what's happening? And my kids were like, how have you never watched this?
It is daytime DP gristle meth. What we need to have a natural history program about, you know, all the various animals I've mentioned, but with a voiceover by Jeremy Kyle. That would work perfectly.
Well, or Jeremy Kyle in a one-man production of Medea.
Oh, man, that would shut out the Edinburgh Fringe for months.
Yeah,
you've convinced me, and not least because, you know, we're all married around this table, but you've got the real battle scars.
Yes.
So I'm going to take your advice. So very well done, Cindy. You've convinced us that Medea is the world's worst wife.
Yes.
Before we wrap up, I've got to tell you all about the world's worst news. This is a sad story with a happy end. So a Canadian airline has had to apologise for losing a puppy belonging to a passenger because they put it on the wrong flight.
Are you kidding?
No. Cooper, the
was
dog...
there some mix-up about the area Labrador and a Labrador?
I wish that was the case.
Sure.
But it's thousands of miles apart. It was meant to be going to Hamilton, Ontario,
right,
and ended up in Deer Lake, Newfoundland.
Oh, which is far. In Canada, everything is so far.
It's very far. If you want to understand the size of that, Google Maps. And what was even worse is when they found out what had happened, they went looking for the dog, but Cooper had escaped on a toilet break and run loose.
Oh, no, Cooper.
Yeah, little Cooper. It's got a happy ending. Eventually, Cooper and its owner were reunited.
Oh,
but
phew.
Yeah, but just thinking about what that owner must have gone through. And because they're a Canadian airline, that they'd apologised and they paid for the insurance and all that business. But
when you lose your luggage, you always have to go, oh, I'm going to have to go and buy, you know, a pair of shorts and a t-shirt until my luggage. I'm going to have to buy a puppy until my real puppy's
until my real
delivered.
Puppy comes back. And also the puppy had no fault of its own, you know?
No, not at all. I mean, at least, you know, it's better than if it had been Ryanair, where they probably would have just gone, oh, sorry, we just found it, chopped it up and served it as food.
It was running away.
This is Captain Medea speaking.
Exactly. And we ran over your puppy.
Oh,
yes. You're always scared of small, like... I'm always scared of defenseless beings of any kind getting lost on international or, you know, in the airport.
Yeah,
it's very scary. But that's why you have to teach kids to talk to the
air hostess.
Like to talk to some staff. But then I suppose Cooper can't talk.
No,
so poor Cooper couldn't have been like
that. Would have been a very different story if Cooper could have talked.
I know.
Like, that would have been.
Yeah,
going to Hamilton.
Yeah, I'm not going where you want to go.
No. Well, that'd be amazing if you'd gone, I'm going to Hamilton. They're like, well, if you can get tickets, well done, you Cooper. So that brings to the end of our episode. Sindhu, if people want to find you, where can they find you in the big wide world, and what can they find you doing there?
Well, you can find me online at my website, which is sindhuv.com. That's V-E-E. Sindhu, S-I-N-D-H-U. Rhymes with Hindu. Great. I'm a Hindu. Sindhuv.com. But if you want to really hear from me, then you should follow me on Twitter, which is sindhuvfunny. But that's just V, not V-E-E, because I didn't think this through when I was starting out. Instagram is just sindhuv, V-E-E. So basically, if you plug all this into the online, something will come up and we can be in touch. Also, in August, I'm going to Edinburgh with a 40-minute show called Iguana Mum.
Nice.
Thank you. And please come and watch it. And I think it will be very funny. If you think I'm funny, then that show is for you. And now it's a tautology. Okay. That's it. Thank you so much. It's been so much fun. It's such a fun podcast.
Yeah, hey, I'm glad to have you.
Yeah, absolute delight. Well, listen, we're all off to write to the producers of MasterChef to ask them to get Stacey Castor and Catherine Knight on. Until next time, enjoy your
cooking doesn't get more murderous than this.
Yeah, your next round, here is Greg. Fill it and cook him. until next time, see you later, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was Sindhu. It's been decided, guys. We went classical. We love an ancient Greek on this show. And Medea is the world's worst wife, taking the pressure off women everywhere for the rest of eternity.
Taking one for the team, sisters. Well done, Medea.
And well done, Sindhu. As you heard, she is a very talented lady. And she is going to the Edinburgh Festival this year. She is taking her fantastic show, Iguana Mum, to the Cabaret Voltaire at 6 o'clock every evening, bar the 14th of August. For the whole of the Fringe, so it's a 40-minute show as well. It's not the full hour, so if you wanted like a little sort of a like a pre-theatre time sort of bit of funny, then go and see Sindhu at that. You know who else you can check out at Edinburgh?
I wonder who. It's this guy. I'm going up to the Edinburgh Festival where I'm sure we're going to be doing 3.5 shows. The main headline, my friends, is at 8:45 every single day from the 3rd till the 27th, apart from the 15th, I will be doing my show Sidekick. It's in a venue called Espionage in the Pravda Room. It's my fourth solo show, and after last week's panics, turns out it's quite funny. So please do come check that out, and if you've got friends going to Edinburgh, I recommend that to them. Two other wee little shows. At 3 o'clock, I'm hosting a show called Classic Joke Club, where a variety of comedians on a mixed bill tell jokes their parents and grandparents taught them, you know, like pub jokes. Mm. If you've got kids, 12:45 in the Pleasance, I am part of a rock and roll band for children called the Small Lacers. Lot of songs about farting. I'm not gonna lie.
I feel like that's the one you're most excited about. His little face just lit up. I'm part of a rock and roll band, and the song's about farting.
It's finally, after 34 years, I have achieved my rightful place in this world.
If you can, give us the usual stuff. Give us a listen and a subscribe and a follow and a rating on iTunes and Stitcher or wherever you listen to us. Share us among your friends. Follow us on Twitter at worstfoot. Ben at Ben Vandeveld, and I'm at Basmax Day. You can also find us on Facebook. Drop us an email if you've got suggestions of guests or topics or anything else that you'd think we should be doing. You know, no live podcasts. We've talked about that before.
We are
quite fun. If you're the sort of venue that hosts things and you think these people might fill it out, you know, if you're listening, the O2, Worst Foot Forward Live coming in January 2019. Yes, then you can send us an email, worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com.
Coming up next week, we've got a very good friend of ours, Toby Wilson. He is an expert comedy writer, an award-winning comedy writer. He has written for many years on the amazing world of Gumball. He is extraordinarily quick-witted and very well versed in his field, which is why he is talking about the world's worst cartoon.
Yes.
Also, he completes a set for us because he is the husband of Bridie Lee Kennedy, so we've got the first husband and wife team bagged by Worst Foot Forward.
Yeah, so if you want to see how Bridie's other half lives, or at least hear it, it's mainly in sweatpants watching 90s cartoons. Then tune in next week.